Well, why don't we talk about Alfred Barr? So
yeah,
you guys were course mates with Alfred. Alfred is, go ahead. Like, what you guys
bald? Told I got a picture bald. Of him. Pass me the picture.
Yeah. Well,
it's right there.
Money.
Nigel's going to remember this. This is up on my, in my garage here.
It's pretty good.
This was cold.
Oh man, that's a good photo.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So whoever's listening, it's us in Crystal City,
and we're all topless, and it's about like minus 40 or something like that outside.
Wicked.
And we have a muskox head. I think Jean Tremblay had a ticket for that. So yeah. And then Al's here. So we're all wearing normal toques. Al's wearing like a beaver tail, like fluffy. Dude, I don't know what it is.
I would
like, hat of some sort.
I'd be all over that too.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, so you guys give us a little intro. Who Alfred is.
Yeah, go Nigel. How would you
describe Okay, him? Well, yeah, so I met Al at Selection. He was a signaler by trade. He was an incredibly kind person, and he was great to work with. He was one of the guys in my group on Trek Phase for, I think, two of the days. And
when you had the stew.
Yeah, when I had the stew, yeah. But he was just a great guy to work with. And he was, you know, Selection's a challenge, but he was right at home out there in the wilderness. And it was all very natural to him. He didn't look like he was struggling at any point. And I always thought that was something to admire about him for sure. So then we had an excellent year on course together. He became a very good friend of mine. What else do we say about Al?
He was a runner.
Well, first of all, he knew too much about too much.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like he actually knew too much about too much.
Yeah.
Like,
so yeah, he was full of fun facts.
Yeah. And yeah. there were facts that you're just like, how and why do you know that? And why do I need to know that? You know, it's just like, it led to some pretty interesting, the story I always tell, it's one of my favorite stories, is we were out in Phoenix, Arizona, and we went to this, we actually went and found a geocache on top of a, what's that, Mount Pikachu? Yeah, Pikachu.
Yeah, Pikachu, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, when we went up to Mount Pikachu, he told us this story. He had researched the mountain and learned a whole bunch of stuff about it.
Uh-huh.
And some reporter had a near-death experience there, and he was telling me, I had no idea what he was talking about. And I was like, why do you know all this stuff? He knew all this, the history of it. So anyway, on our way back, we saw a ostrich farm. So we went to an ostrich farm. Again, he knows too much about ostriches. So he's like, I've always wanted an ostrich egg. And I was like, who says that?
Yeah.
What do you mean you've always wanted an ostrich egg? He's like, yeah, like in World War I or something, they used it as like a canteen. Like you could drill a hole in the top and use it as a water bottle. It doesn't spill because of the physics of it. I don't know.
Okay.
The way it's shaped. I was like, sure, man, we'll get an ostrich egg. So he goes up, and like he wants an ostrich egg. I'm like, I want an ostrich egg, you know, the whole egg, and he just wants the shell.
Okay.
So the shell was $20 and an egg was $25.
Okay.
So he's like, well, I'll just get the shell. I was like, no, man, like, let's get the egg.
Yeah, you
know? The full he's experience. A cook, right? I'm like, you'll know how to cook it. Oh, he's like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, of course, I'll know how to cook it, right?
Of course. Okay.
So we get the whole egg, and I'm like, look, I'll pay for half of it, and you can keep the egg, but you got to cook me the eggs.
Okay.
So we go back. Turns out there's 2 dozen eggs inside of an ostrich egg.
Whoa!
So when you like, there's a way to cut it and stuff, and when you pour it all out, it goes like there's just 24 yolks.
Oh, yolks!
There's
24 yolks.
It's the equivalent of taking 24 eggs and cracking them into a bowl.
But is there 24 yolks or one?
Yolk? Yeah, no, 24 yolks, like tons of yolks.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know this.
So he cooks it up. Now, I thought he would like cook a little bit of it and keep some in the fridge because we're staying there for like weeks.
Right.
Cooks all of it.
Yeah.
All of it.
Well, where are you going to keep them? It's eggs.
Well, it's like in a container. We have a fridge there, you know.
Oh, they're cracked.
He cooks the whole thing. So I'm like, dude, like, how are we going to eat 2 dozen eggs? He's like, well, I'll share it with everyone else. I was like, everyone else is gone. Like, everyone had gone to Phoenix. It's just us.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, well, I guess we'll eat the eggs then. So we sat there like eating two dozen eggs, you know, but they were fantastic. But okay. It was a lot of eggs.
Was it different
tasting? Yeah. Oh, they're very sweet.
Very sweet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tastes like someone took a bunch of sugar and mixed it with your eggs. Wow. It's really good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, here we're getting besides the point, but that was a great story. Yeah. We're going to keep this story for your side. So
I got one, also another little story. Yeah. Throw it in there. Uh-huh. I just remember early on in course, he tracked down and got a hold of a Sartek from course one. 1944. Wow. And had a phone interview with him, and I wish I knew what he did with that interview, because it would be interesting to read or hear however he did it now.
And you know that he took all the notes, eh? Like there's trace of this.
Would have known more than the guy.
Be somewhere.
Yeah
That'd be cool. Get a hold of that.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So anyways, so Alfred Barr is a Sartek that passed away in March 8th, 2017, right? Yes. And so, so he's one of our fallen that has passed away during a training day at the squadron. He was at 435 squadron. So he's one of our fallen. He is on one of the logs at the Jarvis Lake. So Alfred is one of these guys' course mates, and so we're just here talking about that to get maybe build something for his anniversary, you know.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty sweet. So I knew Alfred from the regiment. I was at 1RCHA with him at the time.
Oh, nice.
Like, wow. Yeah, dude, pretty good. Like, he was my intel. He was who told me everything about SAR course, and he had his blog and whatnot. So I was like reading here and there, and I was asking him questions. And he was the one telling me that you guys were so booked up every weekend and you had to pack for the next Monday and whatnot. So he first came up to me. Well, we knew each other, but he came up to me asking me to teach him how to clean and jerk because he was doing seal fit training. And I was like, what are you doing this for? And he's like, oh, I'm going Sartek. And I was like, okay, like, what is this? You know, what is Sartek? He's like, oh, well, they parachute, they're paramedics, they do this, they do that. And I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds pretty amazing. But he's not really selling it to me, really. And then, as he was on the course, I was like watching pictures and like little videos he was posting. I was like, man, it's crazy. And we did seal fit together. Like Mark Devine came to Shiloh and he was my fire team partner, you know? So like Boucher Kovacs bar
for the 20X challenge or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It was. So they came out for a week and I was with him all week. So he was pretty driven, fit dude, you know, quiet like me. No, we made a great pair.
Incredibly humble too, right?
I think we made a good pair, complete or so each other. No, he's a super great man. But that's the story. You guys add what you need to add. You guys know him so much more, and you know how you want this to go.
Yeah.
Well, I got something I can say at the end. I don't know if we're at that point or not.
Well, I feel like we've said some of the good stories. Or piece. Yeah. It's organic. Say what you got to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really prepare much to say about Albar, but I do, and always will. Remember the day that he had his accident, and you know, everything leading up to that point was you know, so much fun through course in the first few months of the actual job. Obviously, you know, safety was always a high priority for us on course and off course, but it was that moment finding out about Al's accident. It made me realize this is real, man. We take some pretty serious risks, and it's really important to remember that and ground ourselves and keep ourselves safe, keep our other Sartecs safe and all the new Sartecs that come in and join us in this amazing job. Every time I'm out parachuting or hoisting or whatever it is, I'm always thinking of Al and, you know, thinking about his sacrifice and just remembering that, you know, we got to look out for each other and train hard and always be prepared.
Yeah. Very well said.
Yeah.
You know, something big I took away from the whole sort of ordeal and over the last couple of years, you know, is I think like how important it is to love your friends and how important it is to really try to enjoy time you spend with people. You know, that sounds kind of cliche in some sense, but you know, in the moment you might have other things that you want to do, or you might be thinking about other things, but you know, there could be a day where you would give anything you possibly could for another 5 minutes, you know, with someone. So I would give up quite a bit to hang out with Al for 5 minutes, you know? So I think, I think about that quite often. And yeah, I think it's an important takeaway.
Yeah. He did wear his heart on his sleeve though, eh? He was a pure, totally. He was very pure. Like he was who he was when you met him. He never played any games. So if we can learn anything from that is loving each other, and you're reminding the ones you love that you love them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we would be remiss not to read the poem. I'm going to read it. Yeah. I know it's been said quite a few times, but I don't think the listeners would know the context or anything like that. So on the sleeve we have "If," and Al knew a lot of poetry and he had memorized stuff and everything. But as you listen to this poem, you kind of think about the type of person we just described, where, you know, he's out for adventures and he's kind of like putting his heart on his sleeve and things like that. That's what I think about when I, this poem just kind of fits everything. So it's "If" by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master. If you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stood up and build them up with worn out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they're gone, and so hold on when there's nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch. If neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you. If all men count with you, but none too much. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run. Yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. And Al was a man, for sure.
It's amazing. I've never heard this poem, dude.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
It's wicked. Thank you.